This is Lizzie Boyle and Connor Boyle of Disconnected Press, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Hello, and welcome to Four Panel, the podcast around comics, manga, and related media. I'm Mick, and I'm joined as usual by Rob and Andrew.
Hello.
Whoa. I have a point of contention almost immediately.
Yeah?
This is the second introduction Mick has done after a fairly disastrous rehearsal.
Yeah.
But I would like to point out, last time we mentioned my name first, so I'm not happy about that.
Hey,
it's called variety.
It's the spice of life.
It's called I Demand Top Billing. I'll be in my trailer.
I think you'll find, Andrew, if you look at a standard variety bill, that the person mentioned in the biggest letters, which is equivalent to being mentioned last in a list, is actually the star of the show.
I'll accept that.
Phew!
You're right, Rob. I got distracted and moved on to just staring at myself in a mirror.
You were right, Rob. If you say it with confidence and it sounds logical, he'll buy anything.
See?
I've got this copy of Suicide Squad here, Andrew. It's in a lovely, shiny cover. And it can be yours, presented by hand by a sexy otter, for just £200.
See, I know you're lying now because I bought all the Suicide Squad.
This is true. He did. He beat you to it. Oh, how is everyone this week?
I'm all right. I've been enjoying the lower temperatures and moisture falling from the sky.
What about you, Andrew? Have you been enjoying the lower temperatures?
Is gassy an acceptable answer?
Yes, it is.
For almost any question.
So what did you think of that comic, Andrew? Gassy. How was the Wonder Woman movie? Gassy. Because it was.
Yes, there was lots of gas. Oh, that's a horrible joke, Rob.
I saw an article about the Wonder Woman movie. I think it was on Comic Vine on Newsarama or something like that. And they're saying, okay, so who is Ares? We explain who the character of Ares is in the Wonder Woman movie. I'm thinking, why are you explaining a character who's been around for like 2,500 years?
But this is it. I keep seeing these articles, and they quite often crop up as clickbait, don't they, on the bottom of something else. And it's like, you know, this actress hasn't been seen in cinemas for 47 years. You won't believe what she looks like now. No, but I can probably make a pretty good guess.
More wrinkly, I'd say.
We explained the bits of Deadpool you didn't understand because you never read a comic and you just went to see the movie because people told you it was funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do think that sometimes some of these little clickbait sites just explain things for my benefit that don't benefit me in any way, shape or form. And quite often they get them wrong anyway.
Well, that's comic book.
Well, how dare you, sir? As someone who has written for said clickbait websites. Yeah, you're right.
I was going to say, that's the state of comic book journalism. I hesitate to use the word journalism. Comic book reporting. No, it's not even reporting, is it? What exactly is it, Andrew?
I think basically what they do is they think, all right, we need to say something about the Wonder Woman movie. Everybody's doing a review. We need to do something a little bit different. I don't know who this Ares is because I've never read a comic book in my life before going to see the movie. So what I'll do is I'll find the Wikipedia entry written by an 8-year-old to tell me who Ares is, and then I'll just cut and paste.
But why would you need a Wikipedia entry? Did you not go to school and learn about, like, the Greek pantheon of gods in primary school? Because I did.
Well, again, you know, you've also got to bear in mind that what you learn in school is dependent very much upon where you live. I mean,
I live in South Bank. I live in the suburb of hell.
But what if your journalist who wrote your article on Ares was, you know, someone who grew up and went to school near the Westboro Baptist Church?
Then they would probably include the terms SJW and feminazi.
Mm.
This is true.
And they probably wouldn't even tolerate the notion of a pantheon of gods that belong to somebody else.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, shall we move on with the news?
Yes.
Yes. Kevin Feige has suggested that, well, he's mentioned that Captain Britain was a possibility to add to the MCU, but he hasn't confirmed or denied whether that is actually going to happen. He's just said, we've discussed it. What are your thoughts on the addition of Captain Britain to the MCU?
I mean, isn't just every non-X-Men and Fantastic Four superhero a possible candidate for the MCU?
Yeah, but I mean,
that's how owning the rights works.
Yeah.
And on that point, every character from Star Wars as well.
Yeah, this is true. It's just, with it being Captain Britain, and I'm just thinking, how's it going to work then, you know?
Tony Stark goes on holiday to the Cotswolds, and while he's there, he's attacked by Hydra agents, separated from the rest of the Avengers, and unable to call on his more celestial friends. Only one man can come to his rescue.
Well, the reason...
Stop Hydra from their evil scheme of stealing the entire UK's crumpet supply.
That's right.
No, we need more crumpet in the UK. More crumpet. We need more crumpet.
They're stealing jam from Devon scones.
That wasn't the crumpet I was on about.
I know. I was trying to steer you away.
No, see, this is the problem I've got. Kevin Feige is suggesting Captain Britain, and if you go by the original Claremont origin of Captain Britain, then there's the whole thing with him being chased, and then there's the medallion and the sword and the stone and the, you know, the illusions of Merlin, and he chooses the medallion and becomes Captain Britain with his staff of power and stuff like that. But then the modern version is he's a mutant, so...
No, that is 100% incorrect.
What?
Like, that is not at all the origin story of Captain Britain.
That's the one that I've got.
No.
What was the origin? Because that's the one that I've got.
It's still the whole amulet servant of... Because he's got all Merlin-y stuff and he's part of the Captain Britain Corps.
Yeah. I'm confused. Isn't that what I just said?
No, you said he was a mutant.
No, the modern version he's a mutant, isn't he?
No.
Is he not?
No.
I think he was a mutant.
Captain Britain is like one of the few characters whose origin has never changed.
Ah. Oh, right. That's okay then. I thought he was a mutant.
He has abilities.
I don't know why, but I'm sure someone told me Captain Britain was a mutant now.
Oh, this is embarrassing now, Rob, because you know your appraisal's up next week, and we've got to review your performance.
Well, no, Psylocke is supposed to be his sister.
Yes.
Yeah?
I think that might be why I was getting confused.
Which, that's the important question we have to ask about Captain Britain.
Yeah.
Psylocke had her mind transferred into a random Asian woman's body.
Yeah.
So does Captain Britain find her attractive now? Because that must be weird.
Oh, God.
Oh.
I didn't go there, Mick.
That makes the family dinners incredibly awkward.
I am amazed and agog that it was Andrew that went there and not you, Rob.
Yeah, I know. I didn't go there. Andrew did. Can't blame this one on me. But anyway, Captain Britain, do you think it could work?
I don't know. I mean, I remember Captain Britain from sort of like the late 70s, early 80s, being the flagship comic strip for Marvel UK. And I was so glad when Doctor Who magazine came out because...
It wasn't very good.
Captain Britain. I've always found him to be a weak character. Now, I haven't invested a great deal of time in reading him, mainly because, you know, most of the comic books that I read now are the ones that when I was a kid, I got really excited about. The Batman, the Superman, Judge Dredd, those kind of things. And Captain Britain just didn't. So consequently, when I've got back into comics in later life, I haven't revisited it because it left me cold then. And if it leaves you cold when you're a 9-year-old boy, as a comic, it's not got much going for it, really.
Well, see, I think you pretty much dropped out just before the Captain Britain stuff like really picked up.
Yeah.
Cause I think that was just before like Alan Moore took over and made it like quite messed up.
Ah, damn my parents for having me too early.
Well, just damn you for not being a 9-year-old comic book connoisseur.
Well, there was nothing to connoisseur. That's my point. apparently this all happened after hours.
As a 9-year-old boy, you should have had the foresight to say, I bet at some point legendary writer Alan Moore, who has written Watchmen that hasn't been written yet, but he will write Watchmen and then he'll write some really good Captain Britain stuff. So I need to stick with Captain Britain.
You're absolutely right. It's all my fault.
You're very ashamed.
Right, shall we move on to Batman?
Yeah, let's move on to Batman.
Because that leads us to Superman, obviously. So Batman first. Matt Reeves, who's the director, or should I call him the tentative director, since the director has changed a couple of times already?
The current director.
The current director of the Batman, as it's being called, has said it will be an almost Hitchcockian noir detective story. So by the sounds of it, it's going to focus more on the greatest detective aspect rather than the punch-kick aspect.
Alternatively, like the first 5 minutes, Batman gets his spine broken by Bane and he spends the rest of the film looking out a window with a telescope.
The Batscope, surely.
Yeah, the Batscope.
I quite like it. How it would go down at the box office, I don't know. That would be my... I obviously, as connoisseurs of comics now, obviously not when I was 9,
yeah,
we've read a vast array of different storytelling styles with Batman, so we can probably accept a noirish great detective style narrative. But the problem you've got with a movie is it's not the comic book connoisseurs you want putting their bums on the seats.
It's
the people who play Arkham Asylum that you want putting their bums on the seats,
yeah,
as well as the people who've never seen a Batman comic in their life but know the character.
See, I would love to see a detective version of Batman, a better detective version of Batman, I should say. But you're right, I don't know how it could work. He would literally have to...
Count the point.
Yeah?
If I were to tell you, like, years ago that Wolverine would star in sort of a neo-Western, like, you'd call me crazy.
This is true. This is very, very true. Because Logan is a stellar film.
It is. But essentially, you've still got all the stuff that gives any Wolverine film it's thrills and spills. You've still got violent scenes with the claws and the X-23's claws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think,
and that's my point. That the wider audience, they're going to go to see a Batman movie, and they're going to want to see Batman kicking ass, fighting villains, over the top action sequences. It's whether you can do that and maintain that sort of noirish, almost Marlowe-esque style of detective storytelling with the Batman.
See, possibly you can. It depends I think it depends very much on how you develop the story.
Last week, for example, I went to see Baby Driver, and if you look at the trailer for Baby Driver, it just looks like it's some kind of sort of lower budget Fast and Furious clone.
Yeah,
but actually, it's not. It's a really good action movie that maintains a story as well. It doesn't just rely on action.
Yeah,
if they can do a detective story of Batman that has enough action to keep the adrenaline junkies happy.
Yeah.
But while still maintaining it as part of a strong plot involving the detective skills, then yes, it can work. All I'm saying is it's going to have to be a very skillful treatment that satisfies both aspects.
Then again, there is Bruce Wayne's alter ego, not Batman, the other one, you know, the gangster guy.
Oh, Matches Malone.
Matches Malone. So, could this be the movie where Matches Malone makes his debut?
I hope so. It's really like Batman. More than any other character, Batman seems like he gets kind of a lot of stuff left by the wayside when he goes from comic to big screen.
Yeah.
Except his origin. That never gets left by the wayside.
No, they keep changing it.
Because we've barely had Robin and Batgirl in the films.
Yeah.
And they're like a huge part of the Batman story.
They are. But then, when they did get put in the films, look how that turned out.
Which one was the Batman movie that had... was it the Val Kilmer one, where it shows him kissing a giant bat?
Yeah. You see, that kind of completely misses the whole bat theme, doesn't it?
Exactly.
In a big way.
No. It was like, That's not normal.
Sure, that's just not the new Batman origin story.
When a daddy Batman and a mummy Batman love each other very much, yeah. They have a special cuddle.
Ignore
the product of Man-Man and Bat-Bat.
Man-Man. I think you've just invented the worst Batman villain ever. Man-Man. Half-man. Half-other-man.
All danger. Stay back, Batman. I have the strength of one ordinary man. You'll be the guy who the ted-eyed man thinks is a loser.
Quick, Bat-Bat, attack!
Bat-Bat is just squeaking in ultrasonic and flying around near the ceiling.
In stereo, because he's unfortunately got two top halves of the bat. He actually looks more like a batarang.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, what was you saying about Superman, though?
Superman. Everybody's favourite Boy Scout. So Warner Brothers have been talking about doing something with the Red Son novel. And I think, judging by the Twitter storm that blew up when I read the article the other day, everybody was kind of expecting it to be a DC animated. But Warner Brothers have announced it's going to be a live action.
Seriously?
Yeah.
They're going to do Red Son as a live action? That's going to confuse a lot of people.
Yes, but this is the thing. What they, in that clumsy way that studios tend to do when they make these announcements, is they haven't clarified very much. So they haven't clarified whether it would be part of the current DCEU or whether it would be done as a sort of parallel Elseworlds type separate strand. So we don't know whether it would feature Henry Cavill. We don't know whether it would be a sequel to Man of Steel, how they're going to crowbar it into the DCEU if it is part of that.
I don't think either of those is a good option.
Mm. Well, no.
We've either got like Superman punching his way over his grave going, BT Dubs, I'm a communist now.
Well,
yeah. I was like, explain to people, oh yeah, this is a new Superman film, but this one doesn't count to the other Superman films.
Well, this is it. And it's like, you know, would they have to... But then the flip side of that is I can't really see the point of going down the animated route with it because we've already had the motion comic.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, what's this then? Is it like the motion comic plus filling in the gaps or...
Basically, yeah.
I guess probably the animated one will probably take a few liberties with it.
My main concern with doing a live action version of Red Son is the American audience because... We know that there are a lot of Americans who don't like those red commie people from Russia.
Yes, so,
except
that's
also
true.
They don't call them red or commies, Rob, because we're not in the 1980s anymore.
No, they still call them that over in America. Yeah. We don't call them that because we're civilized.
I think you'll find
culture.
The term is pinko commie.
Is it pinko now? Well,
it's always been pinko commie.
Ah.
Pinko commie.
Yeah. Well, we don't call them that. Because...
Are you sure it's not the damn Bolshies?
Yeah, that's another one.
No, I think that was England in 1932.
Yeah, that was. But we don't call them that because we're civilized and cultured. But there are a lot of places in America, mainly the Trump states, as we should call them now, where they do still refer to Russians as in those terms.
Yeah. Here's a grim thought.
Yeah.
Every state is a Trump state now.
Yeah, I know. Now, imagine if they release Red Son as a live-action movie and everyone suddenly starts going, Superman's a commie?
See,
so are you suggesting...
I want to say people wouldn't be that dumb, but like some newspaper's going to pick it up, aren't they?
And yep.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big, dumb controversy. So
are you saying, Rob, that if they released Red Son as a live-action movie in the US, the vast majority of the box office audience who saw it wouldn't go... Well, this is a fascinating exploration of the question of nurture versus nature.
Yes, I'm saying that exactly.
Okay. I can't argue with you. But the other flip side is I think it would be an interesting way to launch a kind of Elseworlds DC universe cinematically.
Yeah, but we're talking about a country that confused the Philadelphia story with Philadelphia. and thought that movie was about gay time travellers.
When everybody knows that's actually Torchwood.
This is true.
Oh, that gag was so poor my headset fell off.
Just jumped away in disgust.
Yeah. Do you know what else would make your headset jump away in disgust?
What?
The Inhumans trailer.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you did jump away before I could say that, like, I too would actually really like, well, but kind of both Elseworlds and, like, a what-if cinematic universe.
Yeah.
It's just, I can't really see it working.
Yes.
It was the best thing I've ever seen, and I can't wait for this TV show. Yeah. Is what the Bizarro World version of me said.
Yeah, I've got to say, I've got that Suicide Squad feeling.
Oh.
Something that I was quite stoked about has now become a reality, and I'm going, meh.
I mean, I was looking at the trailer, I was thinking, this guy does not look like Black Bolt at all. He doesn't make me think of Black Bolt. He just looks like some big lunk who they picked up off the street and said, you know, we just want you to stay quiet for this entire episode.
Yeah, if I was going to sum it up in one word, it's lackluster.
Just like Medusa's hair.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, I was just flashing back to when we first saw that promotional image, and I was the one who said, well, now, come on, guys, it's just like a single image. We don't know how it's all going to look on the TV show. Surely the wig can't look that fake.
And actually, when you think about it, that still image looked more animated than any of the activity we saw in the trailer.
Yeah.
It, Medusa, the whole thing about Medusa is this prehensile hair, and what you actually get in the trailer is a woman who looks like she's gone to L'Oreal and they've said, you're not worth it.
This is true. I have never seen hair less shiny or healthy than that.
I mean, unless this is a particularly dark clip from an opening episode, and that, you know, when we see the full episode, it's actually that she's been stricken with some terrible space illness, and she actually opens the opening scene of the first episode of Inhumans is her sitting up in bed just grasping handfuls of hair and coming away in her hands.
Have you been reading Royals?
No.
Because that's exactly what's happening in Royals.
It was all set up for this budgetary cut.
So Royals is just a prequel to the Inhumans TV show.
Kind of, because Black Bolt apparently is in prison, some special prison, because he's special.
Do you know who Black Bolt reminds me of?
Who?
Wilco Johnson playing Sir Ilan Payne in Game of Thrones.
Yes, yes, yes. The only good thing about the trailer...
Is it Triton with makeup special effects that looks straight from Angel?
Nope, it's not Triton. It's the dog, obviously.
Oh,
well, yeah.
No, that horrific lump of CGI.
Yeah. That's the best thing about
it. Looks like a PlayStation 2 graphic.
That's what I mean. That's how bad the trailer was. That the best thing is that.
No, I think the best thing about the trailer was the fact that it ended.
I liked that bit.
Yeah, I like that bit as well.
But the thing is, I'm sat here and I'm dissing that trailer. It's a brief glimpse of a series that's going to come to... is it on Netflix or Fox? It's Netflix, isn't it?
I don't care.
No.
The thing is, I will probably still just watch it.
See, here's the thing, right? Black Bolt is supposed to be one of the most powerful characters in the Marvel universe. Earth-based characters, yeah?
Yeah.
He's supposed to be, like, super strong and have this voice that can destroy planets, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So how is it when he lands on Earth he's getting beaten up by cops?
I mean, I assume he does not have superhuman strength.
That's my point. He should be just shrugging them off. They shouldn't be able to hit him in the face and make him go, oh! And then he blows up a car.
Well, maybe he's just waiting for Captain Britain to come in and save him with his mutant powers.
Yeah.
Possibly. Do you know what else confused me with Captain Britain? He was leader of Excalibur for a bit as well, and everyone else in Excalibur was a mutant, so I think that's why I got confused as well.
That's right, Rob. Make the excuses.
Yeah.
Yes, there's lots of excuses. Lots of X's.
Are you telling us you can't cut with more than one plot line at once before your head explodes?
Yes.
Suicide Squad must have seriously damaged you then.
Well, it was Suicide Squad that caused it. Or rather, not that Suicide Squad movie. It was Injustice versus Suicide Squad. Ever since then, I've never been the same. Justice League versus Suicide Squad. See what I mean? The damage has been done, man.
This was all well before Cara Delevingne and her evil belly dancing.
Yes.
So, is there any more news?
Just something quick to round off. The Japanese embassy have a competition that they do for UK artists called Manga Jiman, and the 2017 competition has begun. The theme is dreams, and entries will be accepted. The closing date for entries is November the 6th. They've said, we are looking for imaginative stories which will stand out from the crowd and not rely on the overworked and it was all a dream finale. Artwork by the most recent Manga Jiman winner, Amy Clark, is shown on the on their website. So you get an idea of the kind of standard that they're looking for. So all budding manga authors in the UK, get your pens out, get drawing, get writing.
Yes, do it now.
Yeah. So yeah, they're being asked to make 6 to 8 pages of just a short story.
Cool.
So yeah. Anyway, we shall take a break there, and we'll be back with comics.
Yay!
Woo!
TV. There's a lot of TV. Even the internet is TV these days. And if there's too much out there to know what to watch and what not to watch, well, tune in to the Geek Show Podcast Network's very own TV show, On the Box.
Well, I'm James Carter Cathcart.
And I'm Michelle Knotts.
And you're listening to the Geek Show Podcast Network. Yay!
Woo!
Stay tuned.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literary Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literary Loitering.
And welcome back now to the bit where we talk about stuff what we've read.
Yes.
It would help if somebody talked about something that they'd read.
Okay, I'll go in then. So, a couple of weeks ago, you guys very kindly gave me all the dross from Free Comic Book Day that you hadn't got round to reviewing. And out of that, I got, for this week, Hostage and The Ballad of Franklin Bonnysteel.
I think you'll find I didn't give you all of the dross.
No, there was some that my critical faculties told me not to bother picking up from you.
Yes.
But yes, so there were some surprising diamonds in amongst all that, which I will cover in forthcoming episodes. But I've picked out Hostage, which I'll review first. Hostage is a real weird one because I don't quite get what it's trying to do. It's drawn in a kind of Sunday Funnies art style, and it's about a man who's chained to a radiator in a room, and it goes through some of his thought processes. And the most intriguing it gets is you asking yourself, maybe is he actually being held hostage, or is this all happening in his head? There's no real indication of why he's a hostage, who's keeping him there, whether there's an end game to this, and it's kind of nowt na summat, as they say down our way.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because on the issue I've got, I don't know whether there was a variant cover that did it the other way around, but the story that seems to play second fiddle on this Free Comic Book Day edition is Poppies of Iraq. Now, Poppies of Iraq is, again, drawn in that Sunday Funnies kind of art style, and it's the memoirs of someone who grew up as a young girl during the late 60s when Iraq was almost on a weekly basis subject to a military coup of some kind. And she's also half French, so she spent some of her time in France, and there's lots of sort of libertarian marches going on. And it's just a really interesting take on commentating from a child's point of view that kind of turbulent period in two countries' history. And it's such a shame that it plays second fiddle on the cover to what is essentially just a rather dull story. Of the two, I would definitely pick up Poppies of Iraq to read the full story. Hostage, yeah, no, I wouldn't. I don't even know whether it's part of an ongoing series or not. I just didn't enjoy it at all.
Mm, that's fair.
But Poppies of Iraq, if that ever comes available for a full review, sign me up.
Excellent.
What you're saying is that Hostage didn't capture your attention.
I see what he did there. That's why we have Andrew on the show.
Yeah.
We do. I earn my keep.
I thought that was my job, doing the really bad jokes.
That was a good one. Your job is quality control, Rob. And frankly, you're not great.
Well, no, it's Rob's job. So that if there's a joke that's getting to be just too funny, he can come in and kind of sort it out.
I can kill, I can kill it with fire.
Summary execution.
Yeah. Now kill it with fire.
See, just like that.
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway, Andrew, your turn.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's how this works. So, I read a manga.
Okay.
So, what I've been reading is Descending Stories by Haruko Komoda. Nailed it. If you just say the Japanese words fast enough, no one knows that you can't pronounce them.
This is true.
So, this is the story of a young man called Yotaro, who is released from prison. He was part of a gang, and he had to take the fall for a crime that someone else committed. So he's kind of spent the last few years in prison, and now he's decided kind of he wants to reform and get into comedy. And specifically the comedy he wants to get into is something called Rakujo.
Rakugo, yeah.
That's what I said, basically.
He did, he just used a different dialect.
Yes, exactly. That's how they talk in made-up land. But yeah, so this is basically something I had to look up. But also it actually explains it at the back of the book. It's kind of the style of Japanese comedy, where it's just one guy kind of knelt down on a pillow and they tell a story of a comedic nature. And it kind of incorporates kind of props and like multiple impressions. So he wants to do that. And so he basically approaches Yakumo Yarakute, the eighth, who's kind of the world's leading guy who does the thing that I forgot the name of already. Really good.
Rakugo.
Rakugo, he does that. He's well good at that, he is. And so basically, like, begs his way into becoming his apprentice. And from then on, wacky hijinks ensue, as he also meets Konatsu, who is the daughter of that guy's best friend, who's, like, also the leading Rakugo artist, but then he died. And so he's had to raise his daughter for him. I'm saying him a lot because they have Japanese names and I have a terrible memory. But yeah, it's an interesting series. It's kind of the weird parallel I'm going to draw is with Itchy F, that thing that you did a while ago, Rob.
Yeah.
Just the idea of it being something about quite a really niche job and just that's inherently interesting.
Yeah, it's weird how these jobs can be interesting when they're told, when someone tells the story of them in a certain way.
But I think that's one of the things that comes across with manga, isn't it? That there is a manga for pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Regardless of how niche it is.
Yeah, whether it be vampires or girls who hit each other with their butts.
I was thinking more about not the fact that it's something that you would normally consider niche. So there will be a manga about plumbing, for example. It may not have come across your radar, but will be a manga that deals with the life of being a plumber.
I think there is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there's like Most Excellent Plumber Katsuo or something.
Oh, there's one called Salaryman Kintaro, which is all about the life and times of a Japanese salaryman, which is just basically general office worker.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but yeah, going back to this, it's just interesting to kind of see the inner workings of something like you would never even consider. And I like that there's a certain amount of pathos to it as well. Because the idea is, Rakugo, it's done mostly by kind of older men, and seems like it's kind of dying out a little bit.
Yeah, it is one of those dying arts. I think there's, weirdly enough, it's one of those arts that's dying out amongst Japanese people, but it seems to be gaining some popularity with Westerners.
Well, that's just us, isn't it? Kind of picking up all the old stuff they'd done. We are basically raccoons, kind of just digging out another culture's trash.
Are you saying that we are cultural trash pandas?
Yes, we are.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes, we are. That's exactly what we are. Anyway, my turn, is it?
Well, I was just going to say, I like this series, but there's kind of one little complaint I had, which is, I think, something that comes across in a lot of kind of comedy manga I read, is that a lot of the jokes kind of based around, look, a character makes a really goofy, over-the-top expression, and I don't find that especially funny.
Yeah.
But again, that's more just a me thing, and even without that, it's still quite a compelling series to read.
Excellent.
Cool.
Yes. Right. Something that has also been quite compelling for me since I picked it up is The Mighty Thor. But the new Mighty Thor, which is actually, as everyone knows, Jane Foster.
Oh, yes. I read quite a bit of that, but then kind of haven't read it for a while. I need to catch up.
Well, it's gone through the whole thing with Odin going, you know, why is there a woman wielding Thor's hammer? It should be a man. Why can't my son wield it? Blah, 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 blah. And then went through this whole kind of civil war on Asgard between the guys and the girls and Freya going against Odin. And then Loki. But against the backdrop of that has been the Dark Elves. And they've been engineering this war across all the realms. And they've invaded the kingdom of the realm of the Light Elves, and things have happened. And one of the things that struck me about Thor, about this whole story arc with the female Thor, with Jane Foster as Thor, I mean, we know about this storm, you know, the living storm, or whatever it is that's living in Mjolnir, which is what gives Mjolnir its thunder powers and stuff like that. And then there was this whole thing with the Shi'ar gods, and obviously Jane Foster beat them up in this Challenge of the Gods thing. But this backdrop of war has been this creeping thing that's been going through. Odin's son's been off doing whatever he's doing. Malkith, that's the leader of the Dark Elves. So this backdrop of the war led by Malkith and the Dark Elves has been against, has been kind of there, bubbling under the surface of all the other Thor stories that have happened so far. But now it's actually come to the fore, and now it's really getting interesting. You know, because up until now, it's been kind of, you know, stuff has been happening, but they haven't really got to the meat of the storyline. And now it's getting to the meat of the storyline, and you have a second Thor in play. Because in the most recent issue, they find out about the effects of war, and Jane actually confronts Odinson. Odinson has found out that Jane is Thor, and he's not too happy about it, you know. He has to kind of swallow his pride when she collapses in front of him because she's dying of cancer. And you'd think somebody who is as old and supposedly as wise as Odinson would give her a break since she's already dying.
Hmm.
I mean, I take issue with the calling OG Thor wise.
Yeah, but he's been around the block a few times, you know, and he used to date Jane Foster. So he's, you know, he's feeling like a jilted lover or something like that. He's being a bit vindictive, you know. She's always been the one being saved, so now that she's going around saving people and seems to have more control over Mjolnir, has been rubbing him up the wrong way. But he's not the one that everybody has to worry about. See, in the Dwarven realm, the Warriors Three and Sif and everyone have basically run into the Light Elves, they're refugees from that realm. The Dwarves have been looking after them, but the war has come to the Dwarven realm. And Volstagg is the Warriors Three, the big, fat, jolly one. You know, the booming voice.
Volstagg, the voluminous.
Yes. He's always been the one who has been happy-go-lucky a little bit. And of the Warriors Three, I've got to say, he's the one that I like the most.
He's everyone's favourite.
Yeah. The Mongol-looking member of the Warriors, the rest of the Warriors Three are they're off doing something, but the invasion has happened, and Volstagg ends up looking after this group of elven children. But the war is so harsh, so brutal, that because he's effectively invulnerable to pretty much any damage, you know, whether it's magical or poison or physical or whatever, he's basically invulnerable to pretty much anything. And so when when this attack happens near them and the aftershock of the attack, the explosion, rips out, it kills all these children in his arms, but doesn't kill him. And after that, he goes a little bit mad. See, if in one of the previous issues of Thor, there was this thing where another hammer had appeared from a different dimension. You know, the axe hammer type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That had appeared, and Odinson was going after that, but he never picked it up. And this ends with Volstagg picking up that hammer and becoming the Thor of blood, effectively the Thor of war.
And yelling, "Stop hammer time."
Well, he sends me this through on a flowchart.
Yeah, basically, there's now two Thors in action, and that's not including Odinson, which is why I say it's getting interesting, because the run-up to Volstagg picking up the hammer, you know, he's just seen these children die in his arms, and he doesn't know how to deal with it. He wasn't able to save them, he wasn't able to keep his promise.
Rob, can you just start reading things with less complicated plots, please?
But I like this Thor, I like this version.
Which Thor? Well,
just saying. Either read simpler stories or bring diagrams.
Yeah, we need infographics.
All I'm saying is Volstagg is the new Thor, who's probably...
No, he's the new Thor.
He's the new Thor, yeah. But he's probably more acceptable to...
Like the new Thor.
Well, I don't know, because...
Like Odinson, Beta Ray Bill, Thunderstrike, other Thunderstrike, Jane Foster.
Yeah. I know.
Some Viking dude as well.
Am I the only person who's never been Thor?
Do you know the funny thing about this, though, right? In the place where the axe hammer is, there's also Mjolnir, the original Thor's hammer, because Jane Foster put it down, and then she collapsed, you know, because of the cancer, so it's still there.
Right.
Rogue's been Thor as well, so is Storm. Oh, then Secret Wars, there was the Thor corpse.
Didn't Wonder Woman pick up the hammer during the DC versus Marvel thing?
Probably.
I am the only person who's never been Thor, aren't I?
You are the one unworthy person on the planet.
Rizzle!
Yes, everyone's been Thor except Mick.
I don't care.
Are we saying Mjolnir is like musical chairs?
I didn't want to be Thor anyway.
When the music stops, fine, whoever's holding... it's like...
I can think of one person who hasn't been Thor.
What?
Donald Trump, because his tiny, tiny hands can't pick up the hammer.
No, but what if Mjolnir was literally like past the parcel when the music stops? Whoever's holding the hammer gets to be Thor.
See, I don't know, because I creep myself out with just the idea of like Donald Trump, but his hands are like Deadpool's hand. But it's starting to keep growing. Just like that tiny, tiny baby hand.
Yes. Just barely able to grab the strap.
Oh, it's gone down one of those routes again, hasn't it?
Yeah. Over to you, Mick.
Over to me.
Yeah.
Right, so I've just realised I'm on a real downer. So I'm going to very quickly do Franklin Bonnysteele and then give a good review. So The Ballad of Franklin Bonnysteele is an interesting one. And I don't understand how it fits into Free Comic Book Day. Because the way I see Free Comic Book Day is you give established readers a taste of something new that they might not have tried before.
Yeah.
So giving them an issue one that's a complete story is great if it's an anthology series that you're promoting. But if it's just a standard, you know, story,
yeah,
give them the first part of the arc and then say continued in the many faces of Thor number 32 or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
The Ballad of Franklin Bonnysteele seems to be neither one thing nor the other. It doesn't seem to be it's a complete story. But it doesn't seem to lead on to anything like a series of adventures for the Shreveport kid. So I'm not entirely sure what the Free Comic Book Day does. And even then, the best I can say is it's kind of functional. It doesn't really do anything new. It's reasonably well drawn. It's reasonably well written. It seems to be kind of trying to be a kind of latter-day pulp fiction type story. There's revenge, there's betrayal, there's... what, if it was a movie, would be a stonking soundtrack.
Yeah.
But other than that, it left me feeling a little bit meh. There's a twist that you see coming. Well, you actually hear it putting its shoes on and coming downstairs and slamming the door behind it. So it left me cold. But there was a comic I read from that batch that really excited me, if I can squeeze it in.
I'll allow it, but just because that's what she said.
Hey! See, that's how it's done, Rob. Spill Knight. Spill Knight looks like it's a real kiddie comic, but it's a prequel. and it's a prequel to a graphic novel called Spill Zone.
Okay.
And it centers around imaginary friends.
Oh, but it's, was it night, like nighttime?
Yes. Were you thinking? Were you thinking Spill? Were you thinking like a Dark Knight that couldn't control his drink or something?
Or had like Blazers?
A really rubbish precursor Shovel Knight.
No. Either that, or he was thinking of the Frank Miller version of Dark Knight with his bladder spasms.
Get your terrible writers right, Rob. That was Kevin Smith.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Kevin Smith's bladder spasms.
Kevin Smith, like, ruining one of the few good Frank Miller stories.
So, getting back to Spill Knight, the idea is that imaginary friends are actually real, but they're visitors from another dimension, okay? And the graphic novel, Spill Zone, deals with the aftermath of an event that occurs in Uptown New York, where there's a massive explosion and the other dimension spills into our world, okay?
This creating a zone of spillage.
Yes.
I get the title.
Yes. So, Spill Knight serves as a prequel to this. So we see Addison in Spill Zone. We follow the adventures of Addison as she looks after her sister, who's been mute since the night of the event. Addison goes on little expeditions trying to gather supplies and things from the affected area, and she set herself all sorts of rules to avoid getting got by the denizens of the other dimension that are taking over the area of New York that got spilled into. And this free comic book day edition, Spill Knight, is a prequel of sorts to that. So we pick up the action just after the event. Addison and her younger sister have been orphaned, although they don't know it's orphaned at the moment. All they know is that they can not find their mum and dad. And they've run away from the spill zone and taken refuge on the outskirts of town.
Okay.
The younger sister has grabbed one thing and one thing only from the zone on their escape, and that's a rag doll called Princess Vespertina that is inhabited by her imaginary friend. And what happens is she wakes up and discovers that Addison's gone out somewhere, and she looks out of the window and sees some of the effects of the spill taking place, and she communicates by thought with her imaginary friend, Princess Vespertina, and Princess Vespertina leads her on a jaunt to try and sort things out. And it's just that the artwork is quite, if you think about things like Rugrats, that's what the artwork reminds me of.
Okay.
But there's a little bit of almost a Dark Knight twist to it, a sort of DK 2 and 3 twist to it.
Yeah.
In the lettering. And you see the effects that the spill is having on, like, household pets, garden plants. There are people who've been caught in the spill zone who are just hanging, suspended, like meat puppets. And you can't tell whether they're actually dead or alive. And it just looks like one of the... To look at the cover, you'd think it's a kid's comic. But I assure you that if you bought this for your kids, they would be seeing a therapist for the rest of their lives. But I'm really, really keen on reading Spill Zone now, having read this.
Excellent.
So, yes, Spill Knight and Spill Zone. Read it. Read it now.
Seems like it has done its job then.
Indeed.
Also, Princess Vespertina.
Yes.
My childhood toy was a blue teddy bear called Blue Ted. How does she get so creative with names?
Well, I think that's got something to do with the fact, I can't tell you, it's a spoiler.
Oh, that's cruel.
I know. That's fine.
I'll just get it from Bill the semi-imaginary octopus. He was my imaginary friend.
I was wondering why you had such a fascination with Cthulhu and tentacles.
Cthulhu and what now?
Tentacles.
No, that might have been brought up by some kind of cult.
That makes more sense.
It would explain all the cephalods.
Yeah. Yes, it would. Anyway, Andrew, I believe it's your turn.
Yeah, which is convenient because speaking of like Cthulhu and Cthulhu-esque things, I have also been reading from the pages of Hellboy, Rise of the Black Flame. Which is actually a filthy lie, because it's not from the pages of Hellboy at all. It's from the pages of BPRD.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. So this is by Mike Mignola, Chris Robertson, and Christopher Mitten, and basically the Black Flame is a recurring villain from the BPRD series. Basically, he's imagine the Red Skull, but his skull is black and also on fire.
Sir, I was away that week. What's BPRD?
That is the Bureau for Paranormal Research and Defence.
Okay.
Which is the group that first took in Hellboy and kind of raised him.
Yes. If I remember the line, it was, you know those creatures that go bump in the night? Well, we're the group that bumps back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right. That was a... Oh, no, what's his name? The actor man. What's the actor man's name, Rob?
Which actor man?
The actor man who was also in Doctor Who.
William
John Hurt.
John Hurt.
Yeah. John Hurt.
The actor man.
Well, if I hadn't been such a fool, that would have been a fantastic joke about time preferences. But anyway, Rise of the Black Flame. I very much enjoyed this story. It's kind of this pulpy Indiana Jones meets H.P. Lovecraft-esque adventure. You see, it's kind of set in Bangkok in 1923, and it's about a group who gather to investigate a spate of kidnappings of young girls and end up coming across this whole weird cult who have been sacrificing them to the goddess Ereshkigal, who is like the Babylonian goddess of the night.
Okay.
Is there a purpose to sacrificing them to this particular god?
Yes, basically they are trying to sort of summon her into the real world to bring about all sorts of nasty horribleness.
Why is it they're always trying to summon the god into the real world? Why is the god never here and they're just trying to wake him up?
I believe that's what the song Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go was about.
So there's a god out there called Go-Go.
You see, you just did it again, Rob.
Sorry.
That's another joke that'll never see the light of day again.
Sorry.
Because of you. Anyway. Sit in a corner and think about what you've done.
Anyway, Andrew.
It's a very fun little story. The end result is the Black Flame is some guy who got possessed by the darkness and became the Black Flame. But I think it's still a nice little pulpy adventure to get there.
So is he kind of a
bit disposable?
So is he kind of a reverse Ghost Rider type character?
I mean, yeah, that's probably like a good way to say it, is he's basically just evil Ghost Rider.
Okay, yeah, makes sense then.
Yeah.
But you said it was kind of disposable.
Yeah, I think just like, because there's not really like any huge earth-shattering revelations. It's like I just said, basically his origin story boils down to he was some guy investigating these girls, found the temple, got possessed by evil voodoo, became the Black Flame.
Okay. So I've got to ask, Andrew, because you've read Mulp, and now you've read this.
Yes, this is not similar to Mulp.
Well, you said the first part of it was like an Indiana Jones-esque type thing.
Yeah, okay, I guess similar to Mulp in that kind of pulpy adventure, but this is more like a horror adventure.
Ah, okay.
Like, definitely the anthropomorphic mice weren't like wandering across caverns filled with human skeletons and getting attacked by cultists with their eyes burned out, but they can still see.
Well, you never know. Mulp's still continuing.
That's true. That I could have just spoiled the end of Mulp.
And, you know, you did say that Mulp is kind of set in the future when humans have died.
Yeah, so to me, feel like there is a bit where they have, like, walked across an area filled with human corpses. Oh, my God, this is basically Mulp.
But going back to what you said about it being disposable, I kind of like that idea because it seems sometimes that a lot of the time comics are trying to be genre-defining in some way. They're all trying to be the next Year One or the next Watchmen or the next big event type comic. And sometimes you just want to see the characters you enjoy reading in a good story
yeah.
that doesn't change the world.
Yeah, and I think you can get a lot of that with Hellboy. There's quite a few stories that are just a nice adventure.
Yeah, I agree.
I say nice, like nice in the sense of involving ancient horrors.
Yeah, yes. My turn, is it?
Yeah, back to you.
All right. I'm going to make this quick because... I'm going to finish up with something that we got sent to us from Turnaround. And this is published by Renegade Arts Entertainment. It's a weird story, by Alexander Finbar, and I think the art is by Nico Rudolph. And this is effectively a kid's book that's not for kids.
Like a pantomime?
Well, no, it's called When Big Bears Invade. And the premise is a group of giant kaiju-sized bears have invaded Canada. Now, Andrew's...
This is what happens when you decriminalise practice witchcraft.
Yeah. See, Andrew's read this as well. Andrew read this...
I have, and that is an accurate summary of the events of the book.
It is. I mean, I've got to say, the way this is written, it's basically written as if it's... You know those kids' books that parents read to their kids before bedtime? That if your kid's like 4 years old or something like that. It's written in that style, but the artwork and the actual content is definitely not for kids.
Elaborate.
I'd read it to my children.
Yeah, but your children would be growing up to be supervillains.
Yeah, they would.
And if you were a scout leader, you'd be training those children to be henchmen.
I've had an idea.
Did I just do something bad there, Mick?
I think you just created a supervillain.
Yes, I wouldn't even have to pay them.
Yeah, because they'd think they'd have to do it to earn merit badges. No, you could pay them in merit badges.
Yeah. You've got the Securing the Volcano badge this week. Well done, Tommy.
Yeah, but this is basically a bunch of bears going rampaging across Canada, doing all sorts of things, covering cities in fries and gravy of some sort.
But yeah, isn't that like the one city they wash away with a giant vat of poutine?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, exactly. Poutine being some...
Canadian.
Yeah, poutine being some kind of sauce of some sort. But I think there's some fries in that sauce as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
You sure they didn't wash it away with poutine?
No, it's poutine. Okay. Fried curds and gravy. Now we know a really delicious way to go.
Right.
I mean, it literally is just giant bears just making a wreck out of cities in Canada. And apparently this is all a story being told by a grandmother to a bunch of children.
Well, in that case, then, it sounds like it's perfect bedtime reading material. Because a grandma wouldn't tell a scary story to a child, would they?
Yeah. But, I adore this. It's so easy to pick up and read. But just such an outlandish idea.
Also, you left out the fact that these aren't just like naturally giant bears.
Yeah.
But if all the bears fuse together to form giant bears.
Yes, that's the best thing about it. It's like bear fusion.
Also, isn't there a bear shaman who like summons an earth spirit?
Yes, there is. It's really strange, but delightfully strange at the same time.
I'm never visiting a Build-A-Bear shop again.
Oh, God, yes. It's that gleam in their eyes. They look at you and they go, fusion! And then you're being attacked by a kaiju panda.
I'll have nightmares now. I mean,
would be threatening if it weren't a panda.
Well, I don't know, because pandas have a tendency to... they have a tendency to kind of roll around, don't they? So
actually,
you
that's true. Actually, no, it is horrifying, because, like, panda would start chasing you, then like immediately trip on a small building and just fall on the entire city.
Yep.
Then try and get up and just like flail a path of destruction.
Yeah. And then someone throws it a giant tire taken off like Bigfoot or something like that. You know, the big monster truck. So it just starts playing with the tire and rolling around, just rocking and constantly flattening.
I mean, that's how the Grand Canyon was really built.
See, if they did this crossed with Pacific Rim, I'd pay good money to see that film. Giant bears versus kaiju from the depths of the ocean. Who'd win the fight?
Oh, okay, phew. I thought like the robots were going to be the ones punching the pandas, because that's not cool, Rob.
No.
They've got black eyes.
No, I'm not talking about the robots. I'm talking about replace the robots with these giant bears. The giant bears can be the protectors of the world.
Well, not from what you've told us about what they did to Canada, they can't.
It's just they don't like Canada, that's all. And they probably wouldn't go...
Bears?
Yeah, well, the thing is, they probably wouldn't go near Japan because Japan has Godzilla and they eat bears in Japan. So
then surely they'd want vengeance.
Yeah.
But then they have to go up against Godzilla.
Yeah, but Godzilla's so fictional.
Also, I'm just saying, who wins in the fight? A single Godzilla or 100 mutant bears?
Yeah, but the thing is, Godzilla has his mates. He's got Mothra and King Ghidorah
Hold on, is Mothra a mate of Godzilla's?
Yep, it's official.
King Ghidorah definitely isn't.
Hey, King Ghidorah isn't, but King Ghidorah just joined the fight just because there's a fight.
I mean, Godzilla versus Mothra tends to be the billing.
Yeah, but the thing is, at the end of the movie, they became friends.
Yeah, but there's friends, and like, I'll help you fight an army of giant bears, friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they're that close.
I think Mothra had saved Godzilla. When they did Godzilla Final Wars, he didn't fight Mothra. He fought other things, but, you know, he fought Mechagodzilla, and he fought Zilla, which was the Hollywood version of Godzilla, or the old Hollywood version from the 90s. Which, now that I think about it, that version of Godzilla that they did in the 90s for Hollywood looks a bit like an alien.
Yes, Rob, that's right.
Yes.
Nick, play along, just pat him on the head and tuck him in.
I am. Can you go get his tablet?
I will. Get a nice warm glass of milk for it as well.
Yeah. And make sure it's the pink one this time, not the blue one. You know what happened last time.
I will only go to bed if you read me this story, when big bears invade.
I don't think you're in a position to make demands, are you, young man?
But I wanna.
You've already been sent to the corner once, Rob.
All right. Okay.
See, this is what happens when you let them get too excited.
I know.
All right. Okay. That's us for today. Anyway, right. If you liked this episode of Four Paddle, then you can find all of our shows on iTunes and Audioboom. We are part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. So if you're listening through either of those services, then subscribe to us. Subscribe to the Geek Show Podcast Network, and you'll keep up to date with all the latest shows. There's more on our network than just Four Paddle. We also do Literary Loitering, Cinema Eclectica, and various other shows like that. If you want to get in touch with us for whatever reason, or you're interested in doing something with us, either a podcast or writing for us or something like that, then get in touch with us through Facebook, Twitter, Google+, or email us studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And that's about it for that.
Skillfully done, Rob. Skillfully yes. done.
And I've been Andrew.
Until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening.